It's time for the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show. It's time for The Game on ESPN 1400. For the next 2 hours, we'll get an in-depth look at local sports in the Eastern Upper Peninsula and Algoma region and hear from the coaches and players involved in the game. We'll also analyze the college and pro sports scene across the region and dive into the biggest national stories. Now, let's get to the game and join your host, Scott Nason.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to The Game on ESPN 1400. You can also hear our show online at 1400ESPN.net and podcasts available at thegamesportsshow.podbean.com. As the man said, my name is Scott Nason, broadcasting from our ESPN 1400 studios just outside city limits in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, on this beautiful Monday, September 27th, 2021. The Game, the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show, will be with you up until 8 o'clock tonight here on ESPN 1400. And we have a couple guests. Actually, we have three guests tonight, assuming the phones work, as we had some technical difficulties last week due to a phone hack. Want to thank our good friend Dave Watson for covering the roundtable last week. Coming up around 6:15, we'll talk Algoma University soccer with one of their coaches, Daniel Scarpino. Coming up at 6:30, we'll talk Sioux Ontario sports with David McKeag Jr., who will cover the NOJHL, OHL, and more. And at 6:45, we're scheduled to be joined by co-host Butch Davis from Butch on Sports, who will get us up to date on what's going on in the Metro Detroit sports world. But as always, we start with local sports, and we'll start with the Sioux High Blue Devil football team, as they were at home Friday night in homecoming, taking on Ogama Heights. It certainly wasn't a runaway game for the Sioux High Blue Devils. It ended up being a pretty good defensive battle of field position, especially in that second half, as the Blue Devils led 14-0 at halftime, as they had touchdown runs from Jake Davey and John Robinson. And you thought, well, that might be in line for an easy Blue Devil victory, but it was anything but that, as Ogama Heights would hang in there. They scored a touchdown late, but they didn't recover the onside kick. So Sioux High does win their fourth game of the season this past Friday night over Ogama Heights by the score of 14-6. Ryan LaPlante, he led the Blue Devils with 108 yards rushing on 16 carries, while John Robinson had 65 yards on 20 carries, and Jake Davey had 25 yards on 6 carries and that touchdown. So the Blue Devils 4-1 on the season, and they are going to travel to Grayling for a very key conference game and playoff game. Maybe not playoff game the right word, but a very big game to get into the playoffs. We'll talk about that more coming up in a moment, and I'll be covering that game for Dave Watson Friday night over on our sister station, 1230 WSOO. I'll have the pregame show from Grayling around at 6:35. One other 11-player football game from this past weekend, St. Ignace remains winless as they fell to Breckenridge by the score of 26-16, and the Saints will be at Johannesburg Lewiston on Friday. In 8-player football, the Newberry Indians, well, they serve notice that they are going to be contenders in 8-player Great Lakes 8 Eastern Conference play. That one's always hard to say, as they won a back-and-forth game in Rudyard on Friday and topped the Bulldogs by the score of 34-28. Newberry now 4-1 on the season, and they are in a four-way tie for first place in the East Division, the Great Lakes 8 Conference, and they will host Superior Central on Friday, while Rudyard now 4-1, they will be at Munising on Friday. The Mustangs, one of the four teams at 3-1 in first place in the conference. Pickford is also one of those teams that are 3-1 in the conference and 4-1 overall. However, they had to forfeit their scheduled game this past Friday against Superior Central due to school closures and COVID-19. So Pickford gets another loss while not taking the field. As I mentioned, their schools closed last week due to COVID-19. Now, their school closure has been extended till Wednesday, and so Pickford is slated to be at Ironwood on Saturday, but if the closure does get extended, that game as well could be in jeopardy. Engadine and Cedarville Detour, well, they both have had their schools closed, not just late last week, but the entire of this week, or the entirety of this week, I should say, due to COVID-19. So Engadine, they'll be 0-5 after this weekend as they had to forfeit their game this past weekend against Brimley. And with schools being closed until October 4th, they have forfeited that game against Bear Lake, which was scheduled in Engadine on Saturday. And as I mentioned, Cedarville Detour, their high schools, or at least Cedarville schools, are closed until October 4th. And so they were scheduled to play Ironwood on Friday. That one, another forfeit loss, in this case for Cedarville Detour. And they were scheduled to be at Brimley on Friday. However, that one appears to be on its way to being canceled as well. So COVID-19 still wreaking havoc here in 2021 with the high school football schedule. In Sioux Ontario high school football, the defending senior high football champions remained unbeaten through the opening 2 weeks of the season. As the Core Colts lost to Superior Heights by the score of 32-17, and Cora would defeat St. Mary's over the weekend by the score of 43-15. St. Mary's will return to action on October 1st against Superior Heights, while Cora has a bye week before returning to action on October 7th, that game also against Superior Heights. So looking at the playoffs here in the Eastern Upper Peninsula, Dave Watson and I were talking before the broadcast about some of the playoff possibilities and scenarios. Let's start with the Sioux High Blue Devils. If you go by playoff points, and again, everything a lot different this year, no longer do you have 6 wins and you're in. It's all about who you beat and how many playoff points you get for beating those opponents. Before Friday's game, the Sioux High Blue Devils were actually on the outside looking in of the playoff picture, but if the playoffs started today, the Blue Devils would be in Division 4, and they would be traveling to Cadillac, team that they certainly know very well. The Cadillac team has knocked off Sioux High the last 2 seasons in the playoffs, Sparta and Whitehall, the other 2 teams in that district. So that makes this game against Grayling, in both of our opinions, very, very big for the Sioux High Blue Devils, because the Blue Devils still have some big games on the schedule, including a week from Friday at home against Traverse City St. Francis. They also have to play Gladstone. So the Blue Devils certainly want to control their own destiny, and they do. But that game against Grayling, big playoff implications for the Devils. So certainly lots on the line in that game. Grayling would also be in the playoffs if they started today in Division 6. They would be taking on Reed City. Looking at the 8-player matchups, if the playoffs started today, this again, according to the website Snooze to You, which is usually very, very accurate on their predictions, Newberry right now would host Rudyard in Division 1 in 8-player football, and the Pickford Panthers would be the 4 seed in District 2. They would have to travel to Sutton's Bay. So those are the playoff teams, or teams at least trying to get into the playoffs, and certainly the 4 teams I just mentioned are the best chance for EUP teams to get in the playoffs. Sioux High Volleyball over the weekend, they were runner-up at the BC Pizza Invitational in St. Ignace. In pool play, the Blue Devils finished 6-2 against Inland Lakes and Mackinac City. Blue Devils would also drop Sheboygan in bracket play, followed by a win over St. Ignace in the semifinals, and they would fall in the championship match. It was a close one in 3 sets, as Johannesburg-Lewiston would collect the victory. Hannah Bird compiled 89 assists, 25 digs, 9 kills, and 4 aces in the tournament for the Blue Devils, while Claire Erickson had 47 kills to go along with 8 blocks, 7 digs, and 5 aces. Sioux High Volleyball scheduled to visit Newberry for a Straits Area Conference match on Tuesday. Other volleyball from this past week, just 3 matches reported. Several of those were also canceled to COVID-19. Sioux High on Thursday swept Rudyard by a 3-0 count. Pickford on this past Tuesday night over Engadine in a 3-1 victory. And St. Ignace would shut out Brimley 3-0, that one also on Tuesday. The Sioux High Blue Devil boys cross country team brought home the first place trophy in a Division II meet at the Jackson Invitational on Saturday, as the Blue Devils placed 5 runners within the top 12. The Blue Devils won the boys Division II meet with 35 points. Cody Aldrich and Riley Evu finished 2nd and 3rd to lead the Sioux boys. As well, Jonathan Willis was 7th, Logan Haskins was 11th. The Sioux High girls placed 3rd in the D2 event on Saturday, as it was Cassandra Gallagher taking third place overall. Abigail Walther was 14th and Olivia Laurie 15th for the Blue Devils. And Suhai is worse scheduled, I should say, to host a Straits Area Conference cross-country meet today. Matter of fact, they might be running right now. We'll talk more about the Ontario Hockey League and the Northern Ontario Junior Hockey League coming up at the bottom of the hour with David McKeag Jr., as both the Sioux Thunderbirds and, yes, the Sioux Eagles were in action, as the Eagles will be playing their games on the road, at least for the short term, until the U.S. border situation hopefully comes to some sort of resolution at the end of October. Right now, the Sioux Eagles playing all their road games and home games on the road, and they did three this weekend, going 2-1. The Thunderbirds also winning a game on Sunday. Sioux Indians Midget AAA squad was in action at the Taft-Yable Arena over the weekend as they lost the Cleveland Barons 4-1 on Saturday and tied them 1-1 on Sunday. And the Sioux Indians will be home to CompuWare this Saturday at 5, Sunday at 10. Both games at the Taft-Yable Arena, and both games are free of charge if you want to go watch the Sioux Indians. And if you tune into Coach's Corner on Saturday from Applebee's on the I-75 Business Spur in Sioux, Michigan, I'll be filling in for Dave Watson on that show. And one of our guests will be Sioux Indians head coach, John Ferroni. Laker volleyball. Hats off to the Laker volleyball team. They ended their 29-match losing streak on Saturday as they defeated Northern Michigan by the score of 3-2, as junior Taylor Fleming led the Lakers with 11 kills in the match. The Lakers would fall to Michigan Tech on Friday by a 3-0 count. And the Laker volleyball team will be at home this Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Bud Cooper Gymnasium as they will take on Northwood University. Laker men's tennis, they posted a solid showing at the ITA Midwest Regionals over the weekend in Allendale, as the Lakers had several players represent themselves, including Juna Katola and Harris Rehan, as they played a first-round draw in doubles. As well, we had several other Laker men doing very well in that tournament, including Xavier Navarro and Real Garcia. And finally, Laker hockey. Yes, Laker hockey begins this weekend on the road, as the Lakers will be taking on a Nebraska Omaha to open up the 2021-2022 CCHA campaign, albeit these games a non-league affair. And you can hear both games over on our sister station, Yes FM, with Matt Pocket, starting with the pregame show on Saturday night around 7:35. That's it for our first segment of local sports. We have plenty more sports to talk about. We're going to take a break. We come back, we're going to talk some Algoma University soccer with one of their coaches, Daniel Scarpino. All coming up on the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show, The Game, ESPN 1400.
Dreaming of owning your own home? Turn that dream into a reality with help from Taquamenon Area Credit Union. TACU has a full line of mortgage products to fit your every need. Not sure where to begin? Getting a pre-approval is a good first step on the road to home ownership. To get pre-approved, you can apply online at tacumi.com. Visit us at our Newberry office or call our mortgage department at 906-293-5117. Taquamenon Area Credit Union. To us, it's always personal. Member NCUA.
Ah, the joys of cooking. Just find a recipe, get the ingredients, preheat the oven. Okay, this is already too much. Pull up Applebee's to go instead. Choose from the whole menu, order and pay online, pick it up, and now you're home with dinner. Ah, the joys of not cooking. Applebee's to go. Now that's eating good in the neighborhood.
Pick up your next meal with Applebee's Carside to Go. Order and pay online, pick up, and head home. Reed Metals in Tafter, your honest, main source, one-stop metal recycling business serving Northern Michigan, hopes you had a wonderful summer. Our summer is coming to an end, and soon we will have snow. Now's the time to do your fall cleanup and make some extra money by selling your scrap metals. Reed Metals will give you an honest price for your metal without surprise fees or deductions at the scale. Bring Reed Metals your unwanted scrap metals, and they'll print you a check. They'll pay you for items like scrap vehicles, heavy equipment, catalytic converters, radiators, batteries, aluminum rims, motors, copper, brass, lead, tin, cast, steel, and many more types of recyclable metals. Reed Metals is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit reedmetals.com or call 906-632-0018. Roll-off dumpster service available for both residential and commercial locations. Reed Metals is located just 10 miles south of the Sioux on Mackinac Trail.
At Old Mission Bank, we're ready to make your home ownership dreams a reality. We're excited to announce that we now offer USDA home loans with options for 100% financing. You heard that right, 100% financing for qualifying USDA mortgages. Come see our experienced lenders to discuss your personal options and let us find the right mortgage for your needs, because it's what we do best. Act now to pre-qualify by calling us or apply directly online at omblloans.com. We're Old Mission Bank, home of your experienced local mortgage professionals. FDIC insured equal housing lender.
Let's get back to the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show. Let's get back to the game on ESPN 1400.
6:15 on the game, ESPN 1400. Scott Nason with you. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by co-host David McKeag Jr. from the Game Sports Show in Sioux, Ontario. Well, speaking of Sioux, Ontario, our next guest is from there, calling from there. Assistant coach for the Algoma University men's soccer team, Daniel Scarpino. Daniel, first time on the ESPN 1400 version of the game. Welcome, and how you doing on this beautiful Monday night, sir?
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to being on the show. I'm doing well on this Monday evening. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. And for those that are familiar with our website, Daniel is one of the hosts of our newest show, the Game Sports Show Soccer Edition. We do that show twice a month, talking not just local soccer, but the world of soccer. And I've been very pleasantly surprised by the response. Apparently, there's a lot of soccer fans in the area because we've gotten very good traffic on that show. So for those that are familiar with our family of shows, you might recognize Daniel's voice. Well, Daniel is here to talk about the state of soccer at Algoma University. And Daniel, my first question is just that. What is the state of soccer at Algoma University post-COVID, at least not being able to play? Where are you and the team at as you've already started your upcoming season?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously now post-COVID, we are back playing OUA. And for those listening, that stands for Ontario University Athletics. We just started our season this past weekend away in Hamilton, Ontario, to McMaster University. The men's team lost 7-0 and 7-2, and then the women's team, which I'm the assistant coach with, lost 6-0 and 3-1. So in terms of where the program is at Algoma University, as they are right now, I would have to say that they are in a good place under really good guidance and under good direction at the university with the coaches that they have, Neil Ovi with the women and Sam Medaglia with the men, people who are really in it for the right reasons and are putting in a tremendous amount of time and dedicating everything that they have to the program. The regular structure from years ago when I was even a player was a 16-game season across two conferences, East and West, in the OUA. And you basically play every team twice in your conference before the playoffs. The season prior to COVID, which is basically when I came in for the university coaching ranks, it was reduced to a 14-game schedule across the two divisions again. And now it's been broken into three conferences post-COVID, and it's a 10-game schedule. Again, you play everybody twice, but they had to bump it back because it is a condensed season after basically having no sports for about 18 months, Scott.
Daniel, soccer started at Algoma University around 10 years ago. From where that program started to where it is now, granted you've been with them a couple years after a decade of development, how are things going as far as the progression?
Well, what I can say in terms of where Algoma University started with soccer to what it is now, I know it's a cliche phrase, but quite literally, night and day. When I was a 17, 18-year-old kid and I was talking with colleges that I was planning to go and potentially play for, and I was basically having conversations with my parents, and I was using my parents' email to, you know, talk to these coaches in these colleges and, you know, saying to my parents, you know, are you going to go here? Are you going to go there? You know, what do you think about if you go there, what's that going to look like and what have you? But then in my grade 13 year, Neil Ovi recruited us, two of my closest friends and I, at St. Basil. And he basically said, you know, would you be willing to come and start the soccer program at Algoma University for the first time ever that we'd have it? And for us, it just made logical sense. It just made perfect sense, in fact, that we would be the, you know, the guys who would start it and, you know, basically in our home city playing where we grew up and where we played our whole lives. But when we started, Scott, I have to say that I don't want to say we started with nothing, but it was almost next to nothing, really, because we had a bag of old soccer balls. We had a little piece of grass that we trained on at Anna McRae and the old Sir James Dunn, which was a high school in the Sioux at the time.
Yep.
And the university had this implementation program that for the first two seasons that we were a competitive program, we would play against the colleges in a circuit of friendlies, and that we would play against Division II and Division III schools in the United States. And for the first 2 years, that's exactly what we did. And I remember our first two games against Ontario colleges, we played Lambton College and Fanshawe College, and we didn't even wear Algoma University kit because we didn't even have it at that time. So we had to wear these old white three times too big soccer kits to, you know, these games down south. But you take a look at the lack of what we had then and what the players have access to now. Again, it's night and day, and trying to make players understand and see that it's very difficult. But having been a part of it from day one that it was started to still being a part of it now, you know, I got to see the early success. I got to be a part of the early success as a player, you know, us making provincials in indoor soccer and, you know, playing against the likes of Fanshawe College, who were number one in the province at the time, and drawing with them 3-3, you know, beating Division II and Division III schools in the States. You know, there was a lot of early success. And then when we transitioned to the OUA in my third year, you know, we got the odd win here and there. We got a few draws, and obviously we took our licks against the likes of McMaster, Guelph, York, these powerhouse football programs. But from day one, it was building the foundation. And I think the coaches at Algoma University and the athletics department deserve an immense amount of credit for that. And ever since then, it's just been building block after building block after building block. And again, I say it's been night and day, but the program itself is in a much better position now than it ever was, that's for sure.
Daniel Scarpino joining us on the game, assistant coach of the Algoma University women's soccer squad. And Daniel, just give our listeners, especially here on the United States side, that may not know a whole lot about the college and university soccer in Ontario, and specifically at the university level in Northern Ontario, just give our listeners a brief, just a synopsis of what all that entails.
Absolutely. So from a college and university soccer point of view in the province of Ontario, the quality of soccer in the province is actually quite high. If you come and watch a game, you can see that the standard of play is quite excellent. And from an OUA point of view, it's one of the highest levels of amateur soccer in the country, being on par with what's called League One. And that's basically a stepping stone to what is considered our Canadian Premier League. And then the one above that is the MLS, which we're all familiar with in Major League Soccer. And that's all done through a draft system. But if people really wanted a visual in terms of how good it really is, there are players every year from the OUA, and there's also a few from the college ranks, who will get drafted to the CPL, the Canadian Premier League, and some who will eventually go on to play in the MLS. And there's a lot of players that play in League One, which I said is on par with the OUA. So the quality is really good. There's a lot of good coaches. There's plenty of development. And as I said a little bit earlier there, Scott, in my first year at Algoma, which was the first year as a competitive soccer program, we were playing against Division II and Division III schools as a university. And that's, you know, at that time, we really didn't have much recruitment and those sorts of things. But we were winning games, and we were playing very well against Division II and Division III schools. What I would say is that the OUA, let's say you took the top teams in the OUA and you put them in Division I in the United States, it'd be very comparable. I don't think that necessarily the top teams in the OUA would beat the top teams in, let's say, Division I. However, let's say, I don't know, midway through, it would be very much blended in, and the teams would compete very, very well. So the OUA is most comparable to, let's say, the D1 ranks in NCAA. It's a really quality brand of soccer here in the province, and not just in the province, but once you get to the national level and you play against the teams from out west and out east in Canada, again, the quality is super, super high.
Daniel, kind of a two-part question here as far as coaching and your background. You have experiences in coaching before Algoma University. How have your philosophies of coaching and just insight into the life of a coach at various levels, whether it be youth, competitive, varsity, university, has your coaching style and changed at various levels and your overall philosophy? Or have you kind of always done the same thing?
No, I think as a coach, it's super important to have, I don't want to say an ever-changing philosophy, but you really need to know the group of people that you're working with, and you need to know the environment that you're in. So my coaching philosophy always depends on the age in which I'm working with. So I've coached players as young as 4 and 5 years old, and I've coached players up to 21 years old in a few cases, a little bit older. So with young kids, it's all about keeping it fun and keeping fun at the forefront, having them enjoy the sport, giving them little tidbits of information. And the goal is to create a positive, welcoming, safe atmosphere where they could turn up, enjoy themselves, maybe take one or two little things that they learned in the training session, maybe a new little skill or something, and then have that excitement and desire to come back and do it all again with their friends. At the youth competitive level, which is where I have the majority of my experience, it's a balance of having an incredibly high standard while also recognizing that you're dealing with young people who are in a critical stage of their life as human beings, trying to find the path that best suits them, trying to unpack who they are as a person, trying to find their identity and so on. But what we've tried to do all the time as a coaching staff is try and focus on having an equitable balance of technical coaching, tactical coaching, the psychological aspect, the social and the physical development at that level, always be, again, really well balanced. I would say that results at the youth competitive level become a little bit more important as the players get older, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old is definitely where the results get a little bit more important. Whereas, let's say 11, 12, 13, 14, and obviously younger, the results don't mean a ton at all. And of course, the development aspect is so important. And from a young age, you want to give the players all the tools that they need to be successful in soccer so that if they do choose to go to the upper years of youth competitive, or if they want to go to the next level, they can implement that into hopefully what will be a culminating success. And we want to definitely set kids up in that way. So again, striking the balance of training at a high level, playing at a high level, being immersed in a team atmosphere, which resembles a family, doing things outside of soccer to benefit their lives, like studying, extra training, and so on. That always has to be met with enjoying themselves as a young person and making sure that as a coach, I always keep that in mind, of course. And at the high school level, again, because you're working with players for such a short period of time, which, again, I have a lot of experience at the high school level as well, you have to try and get the best out of them within a very short period of time. And it's all about keeping the ideas relatively simple, trying to get the sense of uniformity and togetherness amongst the group really quick, and getting those simplistic ideas implemented in a way that is going to bring the school success. So at the high school level, again, it's from an age point of view, you want to have that balance and the enjoyment and love for the sport. But on the result side of things, you also want to hang banners and win trophies for the school that you're coaching for, because that absolutely counts for something at the end of the day, 100%. And then now, finally, at the varsity level, which is what I'm at now, the demand is so high in that I would say that the primary objective is results, and building the program is kind of on par with that. It's really close. So again, focusing on the psychological and tactical aspects when it comes to the coaching side is so important. Very, very key. But all the work that goes in behind the scenes, I would say accounts for probably 70%, Scott, for what we do as coaches. And maybe, let's say, 30% is direct coaching, so on the training ground or in games. But 70% of what we do as coaches is almost not seen. And, the life of a student athlete is around the clock, and very much so at this level anyways, at the varsity level, it's an around the clock job as a coach as well.
Daniel, we got about 2 minutes left. A final question before we let you go. Home matches this weekend, as Algoma University will host Nipissing this Saturday, starting with the women's match at noon, followed by the men's match at 2:30. Those matches will also be played on Sunday for a doubleheader. What is your squad looking for in terms of soccer, not just this weekend, just for the rest of the season? Certainly it's got to be great just to get on the pitch and play an actual match at home. It's been at least a couple years.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's been about 2 years removed. So our intentions are to hopefully push for a playoff spot. Again, we're at a point in our program right now where we're competing against programs who've been established for 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 plus years. First OUA season was in 1904. So we've had programs for much longer than we've been alive, Scott. But we want to be pushing for a playoff spot. We want to be competitive in all of our games. I think especially on the Sunday this past week, and we gave a really good account of ourselves. So if we're competitive in all of our games, we're definitely always going to give ourselves a chance to push for a playoff spot. And that's exactly where we want to be come the end of the season, is pushing for a potential playoff spot, something that in the short period of time that we've been in the OUA that we haven't been able to accomplish yet as a program. So we want to provide ourselves that pathway to hopefully secure a playoff spot, and we're going to try and do everything in our power to get there.
And Scarps, real quick, where will those matches be played, and are fans allowed to attend?
So those matches will be played at Superior Heights High School, and that'll be at 12 o'clock and 2:30 both Saturday and Sunday. Unfortunately, fans cannot attend. Every university kind of has their own policies. Yep. However, you can stream the game, which will be posted live on OUA TV and on SuSports.com.
Very good. Daniel Scarpino joining us on the game, assistant coach for the Algoma University women's soccer squad. Excuse me. Scarts, appreciate you taking time out here on the game, and we'll certainly be talking to you again as the season progresses and for our next special edition soccer show probably in a week or so. Thanks for joining us on the game, and best of luck this weekend against Nipissing.
Thank you very much, sir, and thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
We appreciate it as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more Sioux Ontario sports with David McKeag Jr., all coming up on the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show, The Game, ESPN 1400. Welcome back to The Game on ESPN 1400. Scott Nason with you, and we are joined by co-host of The Game and host of The Game Sports Show in Sioux Ontario. You know his voice. You love his face. You just love the guy in general. Ladies and gentlemen, David McKeag Jr. Kegger, how you doing on what is a very, very beautiful fall, late September day in the Twin Sioux?
Scotty, my friend, it's always a pleasure to connect with you on our ESPN 1400 edition, and it's always a pleasure to see your face whenever I can do that next, even though it's been quite some time. Nonetheless, I'm very happy to be here. How are you today?
Doing great, Dave, and thanks for joining us once again this week, and it's so much fun to be talking so much about local sports, and including with you, the Northern Ontario Junior Hockey League and the Ontario Hockey League as well. It was March of 2020 since the Sioux Eagles played their last game in the NOJHL because of the pandemic. And over the weekend, the Sioux Eagles, who now will be playing their home and road games on the road, at least for now, in the NOJHL season, started over the weekend, Dave. They played Friday night in Espanola. Espanola with a 4-0 victory over the Eagles, but the Eagles bounced back on Saturday also at Espanola, which was a home game for the Eagles. Eagles won that one by the score of 4-2. Chase Tulare with a pair of goals for the Eagles. Gabe Rozek with 37 saves. And then yesterday afternoon at Elliott Lake, the Eagles made it 2-1 on the road trip as Jack Mortson had a goal and two assists to lead the Eagles to a 5-2 victory over the Elliott Lake Red Wings. We'll talk about the Thunderbirds in a moment, Dave, but certainly the Sioux Eagles are in a tough spot, and certainly Eagle fans that are listening to our show and just in general are hoping that the border opens up sometime soon, maybe as early as November, so we can see the Eagles at Polar Stadium. But certainly for that organization, it just had to be good to get back on the ice and play games that count in standings in your league. Your thoughts?
You know what? It's exciting to see them back, and that's the ultimate thing. It's progression. It's a step forward. It's something that we haven't seen since March of 2020, right? It is certainly unfortunate, though, that they don't get to play in that great atmosphere inside Polar Stadium, and one of my favorite atmospheres in the NOJHL, of course, and that comes from a fan perspective and playing there back in the good old playing days, as you will, because everyone knows I have strong familiarity with the NOJHL. And with the Sioux Eagles, their first game back, these games back this weekend, it's just overall great to see. It sucks is the word I want to use, that they're not inside that rink, but as I mentioned, progression. And just having hockey back and the NOJHL back is what's so exciting. And the pandemic has certainly caused a lot of issues when it comes to travel, but the league has done such a superb job in ensuring that the Eagles can be a part of the league this year, because they are a very pivotal and critical point in the NOJHL. They have a strong fan base. They always have a very competitive organization. And despite playing both games in Espanola this weekend, they pulled through. They went 500 on the weekend, which is certainly very, very strong optimism for the season itself. And if I really had to say this year, hopefully the border does open in November as projected for numerous reasons. One, for the Eagles, but I'm not going to lie, Scott, personally, I'd like to get over the border myself just to see you and be on the show live. But I also have travel plans this Christmas, okay? I'd like to be able to enter the States and be able to travel. But overall, jokes aside, to be able to see the Eagles back on the ice, that is what's the most important step forward. And hopefully there's no hindrances this year in terms of the schedule or travel or or anything with the NOJHL, and that even goes for the OHL and even the Sioux Eagles as well, because, you know, with them being the only American team that has taken part, of course, in the NOJHL, they're going to be that team that, if they might have to play a longer part of the season, road slash home games in Canada, but as long as they can have the puck drop in the league and play, I think that's the primary concern for the players and the organization at this time.
Eagles on the road this weekend again. They'll be at Espanola Friday night, Saturday night at Elliott Lake, Sunday afternoon against Greater Sudbury. Congratulations to Sioux Eagles netminder Gabe Rosick. He was named the NOJHL goaltender of the week. Dave, the Sioux Thunderbirds opened up last weekend or a couple weekends ago with a win at Blind River. They had a pair of games over the weekend, including their home opener. The Thunderbirds would fall to Blind River on Friday night by the score of 2-1. And then yesterday afternoon, nice comeback for the Birds as they stormed back from a 3-goal deficit for 4 unanswered tallies in the first or the final 10 minutes of their 5-4 win over the Greater Sudbury Cubs. Sioux Thunderbirds also 2-1 on the season. So both Sioux teams off to a good start in the NOJHL. Very early in this.
Certainly. The Thunderbirds rally in there is massive. You know, there's a lot of excitement for the Sioux Thunderbirds organization this year as the team that was put together, new management. We talked about that in great detail last week. And what I think the big thing with the Sioux Thunderbirds is that they have a team that's tenacious, a team that's fast, a team that's just threatening on the ice. And not gonna lie, I'm pretty excited about the Cubs too. They had a full remarketing of the team, rebranding, sorry, is what I should say. Obviously, they were known as the Wolves. And they have a team this year, though, going back to the Thunderbirds, that can have the ability to strike late in games. You can never count them out. It's almost like a lot of those big-hearted NHL teams that we see, like the Tampa Bay Lightning-type teams that can, when they're down 3-1, 10 minutes on the third period, they can battle back. Or if you want to use a baseball comparison, the Blue Jays love playing from behind and coming up and catching up. Same with the New York Yankees. So there's teams that just have that niche to be able to battle back when they're down late, and that's because good teams find ways to win at all times, and you can never count out the Thunderbirds, even when they're down by a decent margin late in the game, because they have the depth to be able to catch up on the scoreboard. And this weekend for the Thunderbirds, and as you mentioned, Scott, the Sioux Eagles, it was good weekends for them. And just overall, the Thunderbirds having a pretty strong start. And, you know, they have a team that's been really strong on the presence on social media as well, the Thunderbirds. So I encourage everyone to give them a check out on Instagram. They're uploading all the stats and games and on there, etc. They're making it sure that you can't miss any of the content and action that they have. And we've had such a brutal last year and a half with excitement, so it's good to see the Twin Sioux have teams right now that are icing some pretty competitive hockey clubs.
Dave McKeag joining us on the game. And Dave, let's move on to the Ontario Hockey League. The Sioux Greyhounds over the past week announced 3 signings, including 5th-round selection Caden Carlisle, 7th-round selection Owen Allard, and just earlier this afternoon, 9th-round selection Landon Hookey. The Sioux Greyhounds were in action over the weekend at the GFL Memorial Gardens, their second exhibition game. Didn't quite go the Hounds' way, as it was a 1-1 tie against Sudbury. After 2 periods of play, they would end up falling by the score of 5-1. The Greyhounds, Dave, do have one more exhibition game coming up this weekend in Sudbury, and then they will open up the regular season on Friday, October 8th, against North Bay. That one is set to be at the GFL Memorial Gardens. We'll talk more about attendance after your comments on the Hounds exhibition season. It's early. It's a young team. Your thoughts?
You know, I thought the Hounds were going to have kind of a different team this year in terms of being maybe not as young as I thought they were going to be. So my kind of eating my words from last week, if not from previous weeks, with the expectations with the Hounds. But they're still going to have a very competitive team to put on the ice. And I still think they're a playoff contending team despite these young signings and a lot of questions that people are saying, well, they got a lot of young blood. You know, are they going to be able to compete with some teams that are veterans? We don't know. We honestly don't know. Everyone's had a year off. The signs that have come in have been draft picks of the Hounds. They're really known for developing the draft picks. They've always had some good talent come through the system, of course, a lot of local talent as well. So I'm confident the Hounds are going to be a strong team on the ice. Are they favorites this year? Let's call it the way it is. No, they potentially are not going to be favorites this year to win the whole entire thing. But you know what? They're going to make a good run doing so, I believe, despite if they're a lower seed getting in or a mid to higher seed. It's going to be a very mysterious team until we get to see the first couple weeks of in-season action. The only disappointing news that I would say is that obviously the Hounds won't be hosting the Memorial Cup this year, as that announcement was over for St. John in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. So there goes our shot last year between ourselves and Oshawa for the battle to have the Memorial Cup, which is really unfortunate. But overall, the Hounds, not a great start to the preseason, but it is, as I mentioned, just preseason there. So there's still a lot of room for improvement, and that's what preseason is about. You know, you work the chemistry out, you work the kinks out, you see what guys you got, you sign guys, maybe trades happen. A lot can happen between now and the puck drop to the first of the season. And I'm interested to see, as I mentioned right from the top, how the Hounds will do when the puck does drop and how the first couple weeks do occur, because it's a very interesting club that's being put together right now.
And Dave, the Ontario Hockey League announced over the weekend the government of Ontario's expansion of spectator capacity limits at indoor sporting events. As of right now, it will be 50%. So they should be able to get 2,000 and change at the GFL Memorial Gardens. Dave, before we let you go, we have a few minutes left. Just tell our listeners what's on deck for the Game Sports Show in Sioux, Ontario over the next few days.
So we will have our specialist and upload, as mentioned and promised last week, that was going into this week. It'll be a Colin Miller upload this week for a special edition upload, as well as we will have another In the Pocket segment this week. Lots of football talk to have, especially if you're a Steeler fan. Really disgusted if not looking strong if you're a Steeler fan. The Lions, maybe there's a bit more that I'm sure Scott will dive into a bit more as the show or has dived into. So lots to talk about there. So we'll have an In the Pocket segment. For those asking about a Strike Zone edition, we also plan to have that this week. So three shows will be uploaded for sure by the week's end. In terms of NHL editions, which of course is known for our top shelf editions, we will start having them projected next week or for sure the week after. So we're very excited to get hockey back up as the hockey season is just around the corner. But right now, we're still focusing on the local sports that are happening. The baseball wildcard hunt is still wild, as well as football has gotten kicked off. So we're going to focus on those news shows at this time. But definitely Colin Miller had a lot to say on his special edition upload. So make sure you tune in on all of our platforms for that. And I must remind everybody is that we will have our expansion come into the October. There'll be more details about that in future shows, but we will be expanding to YouTube for all kind of new shows, as well as video uploads, etc. So keep an eye out for that. And lastly, Scott, just on top of these three new shows this week, we will have a contest giveaway as well that you'll be able to follow instructions on through social media. So lots going on with the Game Sports Show and the Game Entertainment Media. Always is, and there always will be. So hit like, follow, and subscribe on all of our platforms.
Yes, a very busy time for us and sports in general. You can find all those shows at thegamesportsshow.com, thegamesportsshow.podbean.com. And yes, Dave, we will have plenty to say about the Detroit Lions. Here's my motto. It's a little spoiler for the next segment. With being a Lions fan as long as I have been, you know it's going to happen. You don't know how it's going to happen, but you know it will happen. And we saw all of that in about 30 seconds yesterday, which we'll talk about. And certainly we're hoping for the Blue Jays to get the wild card, Dave, a big series up against New York. They're going to need to, I think, sweep to make the playoffs. Before we let you go real quick, when we talk next week, will we be talking Toronto Blue Jays in the playoffs?
You put me on the spot for that. Love it. You know what? I'm confident. I'm confident, especially since the Jays have the Orioles after that. I'm going to say that the Jays will be in the postseason. We will see a wild card game with Robbie Ray in his tight pants on the mound in that wild card game.
Yes, indeed. Dave McKay Jr. joining us on the game. Dave, appreciate you taking time to join us on the game. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday night for our next edition.
Sounds good, my friend. Always a pleasure talking to you, and thank you to all the listeners. As always, we love you.
And we love you. And we'll take a break. We come back, we'll start to transition to regional sports on the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show, The Game, ESPN 1400. 6:48 on The Game, ESPN 1400. Scott Nason with you, and joining us now, co-host of The Game here on ESPN of 1400 and host of Butch on Sports, Butch Davis. You can hear a brand new edition of Butch on Sports from last night on Butch's podcast page. Just go to simplybutch2, that's TOO.podomatic.com. You can also find all editions of Butch on Sports on our podcast platforms, including thegamesportsshow.podbean.com. As Butch joins us each and every week, unless we have Russian hackers that affected us last week, for his input and firsthand account of everything going on in the Metro Detroit sports world. Butch, we wanted you on last week, but we had some hackers messing our system. Looks like everything's good to go, and great to have you back on The Game tonight.
Oh, well, glad to be back with you guys here after whatever hack and brain there. I don't know.
Well, let's start, Butch, with certainly the topic of the day around these parts and probably around your area as well, the Detroit Red Wings. And Butch, I went out of the last segment being a longtime Lions fan, 47 years, giving away my age, and I've been a Lions fan through most of those years with the Lions. And what happens in a game, I always say this: you know what's going to happen. You don't know necessarily how it's going to happen, but you know it will happen. And most of the time, it's losses. And yesterday's loss was probably as unique, almost as unique as any of the losses that we've seen over the past decades with the Detroit Lions. The Lions looked like they were going to get a victory, and a good one, against the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens a little bit depleted there with many players out of the lineup. Lions kick a go-ahead field goal, leaving a little time on the clock, and it didn't take Baltimore long to get to what they thought was field goal range, a 4th-and-19 play. Certainly, there was some clock issues with the time clock before Justin Tucker hit an NFL record 66-yard field goal. That's right, 66-yard field goal, bouncing off the uprights and then going into the netting as the Lions fall to the Baltimore Ravens by the score of 19-17 to drop to 0-3. Butch, several things I want to say about this game till we go to the top of the hour. You were there. Just give us an idea of what you saw and what many fans couldn't believe that they saw.
I don't know why the fans feel that they don't believe it. It's happened to the Lions
right
on numerous occasions there. That's why I tell you kids out there, never brag and boast. Be humble about yourself. And this is a portion of it there. When you sit up there and boast and brag, and then you get up there on the sideline, everybody's thinking that, you know, we have nothing to worry about. The head coach said he felt very good by putting his defense out there instead of running out the clock to the bare minimum, okay, or running plays in order to do what you had to do in order to suppress Baltimore being on the field. And it didn't work. It all blew up in his face. And again, we go home with a tag on back of our rear end saying, kick me, okay? Just, you know, if you can find ways for the Lions to lose, they will do it there. And again, you know, the good thing about the situation is you saw a lot of good things in this game.
Yes.
You saw a very pretty good defense for the first half, bottling up the particular Jackson, although they only got like 13 points halftime or whatever it may be, and then came on out and did what they had to do with 3 more points. It was pretty doggone good. It could have been worse for the type of team that Baltimore has. And the Lions, I was very impressed with their running game. They need to do more of it. The passing, Jared Goff, that needs to be improved tremendously. He needs to have a lot more communication with his prime receivers. And I'm talking about flankers and the wide receiver there. It seems like it's no problem with the tight ends also Fells came out there as tight end, and he was missing balls left and right there. But they're not catching the ball. They seem not to be on the same page as Jared Goff is. However, again, the running backs were pretty doggone good, and I was very happy of it. And they need to do more of it there. The best way to wear out someone else's defense is to run the ball. And the yep. Lions need to do a little bit more of it there and a lot more dominary there. As far as the defense is concerned, a lot of work needs to be dealt with the cornerbacks. They're given too much room, too much space. If you just want them to catch the ball and have a touchdown, why have them out there in the first place? The cornerbacks got it, and the safeties especially, they got to get a lot more physical in the game there, and they're not doing it, okay? So neither do I see say anymore. The Lions have what they have. They got egg in their face again. People go home sad with their tails between their legs. And again, we're back at the same old song and dance. You know, when is it going to stop?
SOL, same old Lions. Butch, a couple thoughts at the end of the game. One, I didn't like the fact that they only rushed three on the 4th and 19. I didn't like the fact that they called a timeout when they really had Baltimore reeling on the 4th and 19. And of course, a lot of discussion today has been the apparent missing of a delay of game call with 7 seconds left after the 36-yard pass. It appeared, at least to the viewers on television like myself, that the play clock had expired at least a second, maybe two, before Lamar Jackson received the snap. And one thing I noticed in watching the replay, there was also some movement on the line by Baltimore that I thought was even more egregious that the referees missed. And this always gets the everybody against Detroit crowd fired up. At the game, you know, I know the NFL talked about it a little bit. Head coach Dan Campbell said, you know, they're going to apologize. And what does that mean? Has the NFL rectified that? Have they said anything today about what it looked to be, at least on TV, to be a missed call?
Well, the pool reporter that we sent in to talk to the official said that he did not look at the replay as of yet. That, you know, the debate if he was right or wrong, where he made a call on the field and stood, and there it was. There is a case where basically under 2 minutes, the upstairs had the autonomy to run the clock or to basically look at the replay there. That was not done, okay? So there's got to be some problems with the NFL and the officiating, good, bad, or ugly there. The win is going to stand for the Baltimore Ravens, per se, there. But again, what tickled me was is that the official said he has not looked at the replay as of yet.
Yeah,
that's probably the first thing I did once he got in his locker room and found out how good or bad was that particular call there. And it did show to me, as well as a lot of people on the field who was in person and maybe on watching television, that the clock did expire there. So, you know, again, the NFL is not for long, you know, when it comes down to making mistakes. Hopefully that official gets recommended and something happens there. I keep saying there's normally no punishment for the officiating there, you know, and that needs to come to play there. You know, some type of responsibility needs to be dealt with when all the electronics in town are out there and you absolutely do nothing to rectify the problem.
Butch, finally, before we go to our top of the hour break at halftime, this kind of got lost in the shuffle with everything that happened after the game. Lions owner Sheila Ford Hamp was booed heavily, not just as she was introduced, but as she was trying to give a presentation to Hall of Famer, former Detroit Lion Calvin Johnson. You know, some will say that wasn't the right time to do it, especially when he was talking about Calvin. But I think as a Lions fan, how many chances has fans been able to actually express their opinion to the Ford family? You know, you can't blame all this on Sheila, but she represents a family that's really been unaccountable and many times unaccessible to not just to media, but to fans. Did you hear the booing, and was it as loud as it appeared to be, at least on the replays?
I mean, who are you going to blame it on?
Right.
The good witch or the west or what? are you going to blame it on?
Yep.
You got to blame it on her.
I agree.
She's the one doing in charge of hiring and firing. And a lot of it has to do with Ron Wood. Nobody's going to say that. But again, he's the president of the team there. This should have been rectified a long time ago for them to be as petty for something that was a bonus to the particular individual. I'm not saying it's regular, his regular salary, but it was a bonus for what he has done in the past. And you tell him because you don't understand why he wanted to retire, which he had his reasons, and those are his reasons, and you penalize the man by taking his money?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of joke is that? That's not right, okay? And she deserves that and more, okay? Every time you see the lady, I will boo her. You
know? I know you will.
You need to wear a bag over her head or, you know, go on the mask clown or something. Maybe wear one of them lion uniforms or something there as a mascot and do something else besides sit up there and do absolutely nothing, because this should have been solved long time ago.
Yep, the boos were justified totally in my book. The Lions 0-3 on the season. They will be at 1-2 Chicago this Sunday at 1 p.m. You can hear that game over on our sister station, Oldies 93, starting the pregame show at 11 a.m. We're going to take our top of the hour break, but we have more NFL to talk about and a whole lot more in the world of sports, all coming up on our roundtable on the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show, The Game, ESPN 1400.
Reed Metals in Tafter, your honest, main source, one-stop metal recycling business serving northern Michigan, hopes you had a wonderful summer. Our summer is coming to an end, and soon we will have snow. Now's the time to do your fall cleanup and make some extra money by selling your scrap metals. Reed Metals will give you an honest price for your metal without surprise fees or deductions at the scale. Bring Reed Metals your unwanted scrap metals, and they'll print you a check. They'll pay you for items like scrap vehicles, heavy equipment, catalytic converters, radiators, batteries, aluminum rims, motors, copper, brass, lead, tin, cast, steel, and many more types of recyclable metals. Reed Metals is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit reedmetals.com or call 906-632-0018. Roll-off dumpster service available for both residential and commercial locations. Reed Metals is located just 10 miles south of the Sioux on Mackinac Trail.
At Old Mission Bank, we're ready to make your home ownership dreams a reality. We're excited to announce that we now offer USDA home loans with options for 100% financing. You heard that right, 100% financing for qualifying USDA mortgages. Come see our experienced lenders to discuss your personal options and let us find the right mortgage for your needs, because it's what we do best. Act now to pre-qualify by calling us or apply directly online at omblloans.com. We're Old Mission Bank, home of your experienced local mortgage professionals. FDIC insured equal housing lender.
Summer, the change of seasons is sure to bring a smile to your face. Don't let your mood sour at the prospect of dealing with that unreliable mower for yet another year. Rely on the experts at Gaylor Thompson Sales and Service. Their highly skilled technicians can help. Gaylor Thompson Sales and Service takes pride in their work, and they know that an ounce of prevention can mean years of reliability down the road. Call them to talk about your service needs or stop in and chat with Paul and the gang today. Gaylor Thompson Sales and Service, just off I-75, exit 373 Rudyard, Michigan.
Jeep Adventure Days are on at O'Connor's of Pickford all September long. Check out the all-new 2021 Jeep Grand Cherokee L, the finest addition to the Jeep Cherokee lineup, featuring all-new interior design and options including third-row seating and a full-body sunroof system. Enjoy excellent lease options on all-new 2021 Jeep Grand Cherokees, including 0% APR financing for 72 months. Jeep Adventure Days at O'Connor's of Pickford.
Let's get to the second half of the game here on ESPN 1400, WKNW, Sault Ste. Marie's sports leader. It's the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show. Now, here's Scott Nason.
And welcome back to the game on ESPN 1400. Scott Nason with you as we continue to be joined by co-host Butch Davis from Butch on Sports for our roundtable. Butch, we left off with the Detroit Lions from the last hour, and certainly there were a lot of games played in the NFL, and certainly want your take on many of those games. In the NFC North, we actually had two teams that actually won games, which has been a rarity this season. The Green Bay Packers last night, they also came back late. You don't want to leave Aaron Rodgers time on the clock to drive, and they did as the Mason Crosby hits a late field goal, a 51-yarder, as the Green Bay Packers win at San Francisco 30-28 to go to 2-1 in the division. The Lions' next opponent, the Chicago Bears, they got ran out of the stadium in Cleveland as the Cleveland Browns absolutely destroy the Chicago Bears as the Bears fall to 1-2. The final score of that game was 26-6. And the Minnesota Vikings, who I think have played pretty well this season despite being 0-2, coming in to their home opener against Seattle, Kirk Cousins, 30 of 38, 323 and three touchdowns as the Minnesota Vikings defeat Seattle by the score of 30-17. And it almost looked, Butch, if the Lions would have hung on to that victory and San Francisco would have hung on, we would have had four teams in NFC North at 1-2. But as things stand, Green Bay in first place. Your thoughts on those games that I mentioned as far as the NFC North?
The Lions are the last place champs.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Oh, well, I was very shocked with Pittsburgh and Cincinnati there. Cincinnati coming back, and for Pittsburgh, their offense, they need to really hurry up and look at that, you know, and changes need to be made on that. Arizona looked very well against Jacksonville, although Jacksonville had a hold on them for a minute. Buffalo and Washington, well, Buffalo, you know they was what they were going to do there. Well, Washington's still licking their paws. And I'm surprised with the Oakland Raiders, okay? Regardless of what problems they got and whatever it may be, they won, okay? And Seattle losing to Minnesota, that was a big fat joke, although I don't think Seattle is as good as a lot of people want to put them up to be, although they got the personnel that they can't come back. This is going to be a long season. They got 14 more games to go. It's not going to, thrill me about the Rams. Were to me a surprise to not lose any games, although I think the second half of the season is going to find out how good they really are there. I'm very shocked with the New England and New Orleans as well. New Orleans winning that game there and putting the hurting on New England. Although, I don't think New England is that far off of winning some games and maybe easing into the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be a first-place team, but again, I looked at some of the highlights of that particular game, and New England don't seem to be as far off as they looked on the field yesterday.
Yeah, some of my thoughts, Butch, from the games I watched, you mentioned Las Vegas, didn't look pretty, but they go to 3-0 as they top Miami 31-28 in overtime, despite having Josh Jacobs out, the Vegas Raiders 3-0. And boy, you look at the AFC West right now, it's pretty topsy-turvy. Raiders at 3-0, Denver just took the New York Jets to the woodshed, shutting them out at home 26-0. The Denver Broncos and Teddy Bridgewater 3-0. However, they've beaten the Giants, the Jets, and Jacksonville, who are combined 0-9. So we'll find out if the Broncos are for real. And the Chargers going into Kansas City and beating the Kansas City Chiefs yesterday, I think that one was a lot of surprise for many. But the Chargers have played Kansas City tough over the years. They beat them by the score of 30-24 at Chargers 2-1. The Kansas City Chiefs 1-2 and in last place. I don't think at any point in the season I thought that I would be saying the last place Kansas City Chiefs. But again, it is early after week three. You talked about Minnesota and Seattle. Seattle certainly up against it in the West because you have the Rams 3-0, Arizona 3-0, two very good teams, and they play each other this upcoming week in San Francisco 2-1. So Seattle certainly has the offensive weapons, but I think defensively that's where they're struggling. The Rams, certainly a big win against the defending Super Bowl champs. Tampa Bay 34-24. Matt Stafford looks good. Let's see once adversity starts hitting Matt Stafford how well he plays. But after three games, you can't complain about his performance. He has played very, very well so far. Some of the other games yesterday, nobody cares. Atlanta over the New York Giants, 17-14. Both those teams are definitely struggling. You talked about Buffalo, Josh Allen with a big game, 32 for 43, 358 yards passing and four touchdowns. Washington, their strength apparently coming into the season was defense, but right now it doesn't appear to be as such, as they are struggling, especially Chase Young. He didn't have a tackle. He didn't have a sack, nothing yesterday. You mentioned Arizona kind of winning ugly, but doing enough as they defeated Jacksonville by the score of 31-19. Jacksonville won their opener last season, and they have lost every game since then, 18 in a row. Tennessee over Indianapolis, 25-16. The Titans are starting to get rolling. Ryan Tannehill looking better. They didn't have to have Derrick Henry do everything. And Indianapolis now 0-3. We talked about the Chargers over the Chiefs. We also talked about, you said, New Orleans over New England. That was a bit of a surprise to me as well, especially how New Orleans looked last week. But I think New England still with that defense can be in a lot of games. Cleveland with 11 sacks knocks out Chicago 26-6. Justin Fields struggled. He got injured in that game, as head coach Matt Nagy says it could be either him or Andy Dalton or even Nick Foles playing. Pittsburgh, you mentioned, Butch, looking very poor offensively. As Cincinnati 2-1. Not many people are talking about the Bengals as they win. And then the Thursday night game seems like a long time ago, Carolina over Houston at 24-9. So, Butch, final thoughts on the NFL. The Lions go to Chicago this week, a team that got beat up pretty bad in the Bears. The Lions 0-3 certainly have some positives. What do they need to do better that you hadn't mentioned?
Positive, Scott.
You mentioned the running game. I think the running game is good. The defense, while the secondary played poor in the second half, certainly played their best game of the year. Well, yeah, they need to get a whole game. And you know what? The crowd was loud. That's it. That's all the positives I got.
to the crowd there who are being very, very loyal to the Lions instead of tucking their bags up and going maybe to Comerica Park across the street or something there. But, you know, I think Kansas City thing there, we didn't mention about Andy Reid, being hospitalized after the game there. I think there's a lot of concern with Andy Reid at this point in time. My peeps in Kansas City say, so far so good, he's okay.
Good.
But they're just making sure that they dot the I's and cross the T's there when it comes down to releasing him from the hospital there. So from what I understand now, he's still in the hospital. They're checking him out thoroughly there. And hopefully he will be released maybe tomorrow or Thursday afternoon.
That's good news. And Butch, let's transition to college football. It was a big weekend for the state of Michigan. Both Michigan and Michigan State improved to 4-0 on the season. Both teams had to eke victories out. Michigan had a big lead against Rutgers. And then second half, their offense couldn't move. And Rutgers certainly had several chances to tie and possibly win that game. But Michigan holds on to a 20-13 home win against Rutgers. Michigan now ranked 15th in the latest poll. Michigan State now 17th in the country. You talk about an offensive shutdown in the second half, Butch. Michigan State only had, I think, 15 yards of offense in the second half, but it was defense and special teams that carried the way in their comeback victory over Nebraska in overtime at 23-20. Michigan State had a punt return late in the fourth quarter for a touchdown. They also had a key interception in overtime, which led to the game-winning field goal. Michigan will be at Wisconsin on Saturday at 3:30, while Michigan State will host Western Kentucky Saturday night at 7. And Butch, you had Eastern, Central, and Western Michigan all winning. So if you're a fan of college football Division I in the state of Michigan, you had a pretty good weekend.
Very good weekend indeed there. Again, I'm very impressed with the running game of Michigan State and also of Michigan there. If they keep doing what they're doing with that, that's going to relieve a lot of pressure off that offensive line there. per se, when it comes down for the quarterback, when he decides he wants to throw the ball there, which right now that looks pretty good, doggone good for both of those teams there. Defense, I'm very impressed, again, with both those teams, Michigan State and well as Michigan. With the MAC conference, all three of those particular teams win, Western, Central, and Eastern Michigan there. It looks like it's going to be some good times there in the state of Michigan if they keep that habit going there. I know Western Michigan is a lot better than a lot of people say it is to be. So Michigan State better be ready when they come down to meet Western Michigan next week.
And Butch, being a Michigan State fan as I am, and I know my cousin Tiny's listening, and she's a huge Michigan State fan, football, basketball, and all sports. Mel Tucker, in his second season, now last year with COVID and not really having time to prepare, Michigan State struggled, as did Michigan. It seems to me he's saying the right things, doing the right things, and that's all good and fine, but you got to see the product on the field. And I like the fact that Michigan State did struggle in this game and had to figure out a way to win, and they did. Past Spartan teams didn't seem to do that. Are you impressed with what Mel Tucker has done with this squad so far this season?
I'm impressed with how he's handled it. He's been being very humble about yep. it, very soft spoken. He's not putting the rah-rah dis boom ball into play that puts the pressure not only on him but the team in general. They're just going about their business, taking care of one game at a time. If they go about it doing that way, then on Halloween afternoon or during the Halloween weekend, we'll have a very good game between two participating opponents there with Michigan State and Michigan there. Because that's when the rubber's going to meet the road on that particular weekend there.
A couple other Big Ten games I wanted to talk about, Butch. Wisconsin against Notre Dame. That game was close in the fourth quarter. I think it was 17-13 Notre Dame, and Notre Dame just absolutely took Wisconsin to the woodshed. That would be Michigan's next opponent in Wisconsin, 41-13. Our good friend Dave Watson, who filled in for you last week, was smiling wide about that game. And this one really shocked me. Minnesota at home against Bowling Green, a MAC school. Minnesota was favored by 31 points in that game, and Bowling Green goes into Minnesota and wins 14-10. That's a big win for the MAC.
Well, the MAC conference is not a slush conference as other people want them to appear to be, okay? And again, I have this knowledge, this knowledge that basically, there's a lot of good teams across America that doesn't get the claim to fame as they should get, because of this particular group of people who want to say that the top 25 or the Southeast Division getting all this hoopla. Clemson is not doing well at all.
No, by golly, they lost.
They haven't heard too much about them, yay or nay, but yes, Clemson is getting their rear end kicked in. So everyone can have a good year, but it's nice to hear about, the teams that you don't hear about getting the claim to fame. Appalachian State is another team that has been very good against Division I teams, that give them very good doggone competition, and you don't hear too much about that particular team. And, it's good that now that the stations are giving the plays to these particular teams that are, giving the whooping to some of these major colleges there, because everything cannot always stay the same.
Top five right now in the AP poll: Alabama 1, Georgia 2, your Oregon Ducks 3, Penn State 4, Iowa 5. You have Oklahoma at 6, Cincinnati 7. Cincinnati plays number 9 Notre Dame this week. So really no surprises there. Maybe Oregon at number 3, the only real surprise to me, Butch.
I was a surprise.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, and Iowa's looking good.
How is it a surprise, Scott?
Well, maybe at 3. I mean, I thought Oregon would be a good team, but I don't think after 3 or 4 weeks I'd see them at number 3.
You beat Ohio State.
That's true.
What's the problem with that one? Michigan can't beat them. Michigan State can't whoop them. They have had that reputation of good football teams all year long. And regardless of people want to accept the fact or not, Ohio State has not lost their luster when it comes down to the conference of the Big Ten there. They're doing what they're supposed to do, and that's win games in the Big Ten. So don't kick them in the teeth there, because Ohio State's going to be there when it comes, when the crap hits the fan there. Oregon is beating teams. They have a very good athletic prowess there. I look at their defense as their downfall, but so far so good. Their offense has been very good, where they overcame a lot there. So, Oregon number three, they deserve that. They beat Ohio State at the time, who was ranked number four. I think Oregon was ranked way below 10, okay?
I agree that they...
Everything they're getting right now, Oregon knows if they want to stay that way, they're going to have to continue to win. If they lose 1 week, they're going to drop like a habit, okay? And, you know, no one's going to feel sorry for them.
I agree they should be there, Butch. I'm just surprised that they're at three going into the beginning of the season, because I did not think they would beat Ohio State, and I was certainly happy that they did. Well, they'll have their chance to get higher and keep winning games, and certainly lots more college football.
And see Alabama doing a playoff or something and beat up on them.
Well, now you're getting carried away.
We got a story there, but right now, Oregon seems to have a problem when it comes down to the playoffs there. So they got to get better at that. And they also got to deal with their conference. Stanford is not a bad team this year. Okay, where other people thought they were going to be very poor. Arizona State, they're kind of average right now. People thought they were going to be able to grow up there. So they got to – everybody now – it's locked in, because now we've got conference games going on. Everybody with Michigan State this week there. But when these conference games come running around there, we're going to find out the arrangements of experience and the arrangements of who belong and who don't.
Butch, I'll tell you this before we go to break. I do hope that Alabama and Oregon would meet in the national championship, because you and I would have a lot of fun with that one.
I would have some very good fun with that there. Because, you know, Alabama can't keep doing it for long. But I say that every year, and they prove me wrong every single year. Damn. That's what teams are supposed to do there. So, you know, their consistency down there, and I'm talking about Alabama, is great. So Oregon, what they have to do is do what they're supposed to do is don't let down, because Washington State and some other teams on the West Coast, and we talk about USC, who fired a coach already. Okay?
Yeah, we too.
They're not going to stay the way they are in the particular conference they're in, and with the fan base as raucous as they are, they're not going to stay that way for long.
Butch, we're going to take our next break here on The Game. When you and I come back, we're going to talk Major League Baseball, the Detroit Tigers in action this afternoon as things got a little testy at Comerica Park. We'll talk about them, as well as look at the baseball playoff push heading into the final week of the regular season. All coming up on the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show, The Game, ESPN 1400.
Getting the kids to practice on time, remembering if it's your day to bring snacks, making it to the game with a clean jersey. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with Auto Owners, insurance doesn't have to be one of them. Auto Owners works with independent agents who answer when you call, so you can worry about more important things, like whether your kid is going to run toward first or third base. That's simple human sense.
Madigan Pinkator, your independent Auto Owners agency on West Water Street in the Sioux.
MNC Water Systems has a solution for all your water needs. Want clean, fresh drinking water? MNC Water Systems proudly distributes Norway Springs artesian water, bottled right here in the Upper Peninsula. Cooler rental and bottled water delivery for your home and office are available. MNC Water Systems is offering contactless delivery right to your door, as well as curbside pickup. Call Mo at MNC Water Systems today at 906-647-7307, serving the Eastern UP for over 25 years.
Mow, dig, haul, lift. The versatile Kubota BX Series subcompact tractor does it all. Easy to switch attachments, a smooth hydrostatic transmission. The BX Series is part of our under 100 horsepower tractor lineup, rated number one for reliability. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo. Skinners of Pickford, your tractor source in the north, Pickford, Michigan. Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Central Savings Bank, ask what we can do for you. Central Savings Bank has been your hometown bank since 1902. They live where you live, and they're here to help. Stop into one of their 9 locations and ask what the CSB family can do for you. With conveniences like online banking, access your money when and where you want, CSB Loan Pay Express, pay your CSB loan wherever you are, instant issue debit cards, stop by your local branch and get a new card without the wait, mobile wallet, make purchases right from your smartphone. Central Savings Bank has all the conveniences you need and want for today's fast-paced world. Visit one of their 9 locations today to get started by asking what the CSB family can do for you. Bank with the best. Bank with Central Savings Bank.
Central Savings Bank. Ask what we can do for you.
Dreaming of owning your own home? Turn that dream into a reality with help from Taquamenon Area Credit Union. TACU has a full line of mortgage products to fit your every need. Not sure where to begin? Getting a pre-approval is a good first step on the road to home ownership. To get pre-approved, you can apply online at tacumi.com. Visit us at our Newberry office or call our mortgage department at 906-293-5117. Taquamenon Area Credit Union. To us, it's always personal. Member NCUA. You can catch podcasts of the game at thegamesportsshow.com. Now let's get back to it with Scott Nason here on ESPN 1400.
7:24 on the game, ESPN 1400. Scott Nason with you as we continue our roundtable with co-host of the game and host of Butch on Sports, Butch Davis. Butch, let's move on to Major League Baseball. The Detroit Tigers lost 2 of 3 to the Kansas City Royals over the weekend and had a makeup game this afternoon against the Chicago White Sox, the home finale at Comerica Park. And it certainly was an interesting affair. The Tigers were down 8-2, would rally, but fall 8-7 in that game. There was a little bit of a brawl. They were kung fu fighting as Jose Abreu for the White Sox was hit in the elbow with a 97-mile-per-hour fastball as the bench came out. Members of the Chicago coaching staff came out, and then moments later, Abreu slid recklessly into Nico Goodrum, trying to steal second base on a ball in the dirt. The dugouts and bullpen emptied again onto the field. However, no punches were thrown as the Tigers fall by the score of 8-7 in a game that didn't really mean anything as far as standing. Certainly a very entertaining game this afternoon at Comerica Park.
Well, indeed, I just think that Chicago got really jealous that the Tigers came back. And you can remember, it was an 8-0 game at one time
right there.
And the Tigers just continue to fight their way back. And if there's any indication of what Chicago will have to deal with next year, when you and I know that they're going to have better players on the team, it's all about them being healthy, wealthy, and wise, that they will have a wee bit more competition next year. It won't be this way next year if the Tigers got anything to do with the standings and how the particular league is set up, you know, when it comes down to their young players and the young personnel there.
Yeah, Miguel Cabrera with a double today, 14 hits away from 3,000, so he still has a chance to get it this season, Butch, but with just 6 games left, it's pretty tough. And, you know, Cabrera certainly, I think, one of the positives for the Detroit Tigers as far as his performance this season. He played in probably more games than a lot of people thought he would. He gets his 500th home run. You saw some of the youngsters come up. Matt Manning pitched today, didn't do well. But, you know, overall, and we'll kind of have a season synopsis next week once the regular season is completed. What were some of the other positives from this season, in your opinion?
Well, there are a lot. I think one thing you got to look at is that the Tigers decided to take a chance on their young pitchers instead of keeping them in the minor league. I think this is going to do them better than anything concerned. One of those particular pitchers who only pitched half the season but is under the knife as of today, Matthew Boyd, you'll have him next season. Hopefully, if he can recover in time, get strong in time, go through spring training with some elegance there, and he'll be ready for him as well there. You know, it's going to be a situation right now, and I think for the Tigers, who wants to stay and who wants to go? I think Nico Goodman was on that, what you call that, chopping block. But lately here, since he's been playing every day, he's been doing very well and being an asset to the team as far as some leadership is concerned. So it's going to be a lot of tough choices for A.J. Hinch and Alavila to come up with a roster that's going to be competing, which from Alcavilla's standpoint, there should be no reason why.
We seem to have lost Butch Davis here for a moment.
The one thing is for sure right now they have to deal with, and you mentioned Miguel Cabrera. This guy had a 105 average in May, and he built himself up and continued to fight and continue to fight. And I think these young kids got to see that. And if that could be any portion of play for next year, is that you got to keep fighting in order to be somewhat successful there. I think they took a lot out of this season when it comes down to the veteran play on our team there. And that goes for Scope and some other players as well who are veterans who really came on out there and showed these kids that they're not the team, but, you know, they're just part of it, and they're needed. These young kids are needed when it comes down to making contributions for the Tigers to be a winning success in 2022.
The Tigers will end their regular season on the road this week, starting with their three-game set in Minnesota, then ending on the weekend at Chicago to play the White Sox. You can hear tomorrow night's game over on our sister station, 1230 WSOO, starting with the pregame show around 7:20. Butch, certainly we're into the final week of the regular season in Major League Baseball, and looking at the playoff races in the American League, division winners pretty much basically clinched. Tampa in the East, Chicago in the Central. Houston, I still think, needs to win one game to clinch, but they will. Two wild card spots are up for grabs, as New York and Boston right now in the wild card position. Toronto a game back. They started a three-game series against New York. Seattle two games back, and Oakland three out of the wild card. In the National League, still two division races to sort out. Atlanta leads Philadelphia by 2.5 games in the East. San Francisco still leading the LA Dodgers, both teams over 100 wins. The Giants lead the Dodgers by 2 in the West. The Dodgers have clinched a playoff spot and would finish as a wild card team with 100 wins. The Milwaukee Brewers have clinched the Central. And how about the St. Louis Cardinals? Now pretty much assured a wild card spot. They have won 16 games in a row. A potential St. Louis LA Dodgers wild card matchup, that would be enticing. Your thoughts on the playoff picture?
Yeah, I don't think LA won any parts of St. Louis.
No.
They're doing things right now.
Not at all.
They're doing one heck of a job there. One of the races that I'm looking at is the Philadelphia and Atlanta race in the East Division there. Well, it's not no playoff rule for none of those teams. So whoever wins that particular conference there or division, they're going to be representative of playoff ramifications there. And the other team is going to be, again, licking their chops and saying what happened there. The Phillies right now is a dangerous team there. And they do play Atlanta this week, okay? So Atlanta is not out the woods regardless of their 2.5 game lead over the Phillies. This is going to be one exciting week, especially when it comes down to San Francisco and Los Angeles as well. Both those teams are in the playoffs, so they don't have to worry about that too much. The only thing that's got to be worried about is that if you're in first place, you ain't got to go to that play-in series there. And I don't think none of the teams want any parts of that there, okay? So whatever it is right now, it's going to be a goodie there. And regardless of what you think or what you feel, right now St. Louis is a team that needs to be watched.
Yeah,
they
sure do. They were all pretty much out of the wild card hunt in early August, about nine games out. And
you win some games in a row.
Yep.
You know, like some other teams should be doing. You know, Cincinnati had an opportunity. There were plenty of teams in the National League they had an opportunity, and you know, you can see where their true colors come on out there. They're They're just not ready. But St. Louis, with that tradition that they have, those younger players mixed with those older players and veteran players who've been there, you know, that's a good doggone mix for some very good eating during the postseason there.
Yeah, we will know the postseason matchups when we talk next week here on the game. Butch, before we go to our final break, let's talk about the Detroit Red Wings finishing up training camp in Traverse City as they will have their first exhibition game on Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. against the Chicago Blackhawks. I did see yesterday that forward Jacob Vrana was injured in training camp. We don't know too much, or at least I don't know too much about that injury. Thoughts on the Red Wings as they head into exhibition play and before not too long, regular season play?
Well, Vrana right now is going to be looked at by a specialist, okay? They're going to make sure that he's 110% all right. Right now, the Red Wings don't think so. I think he's going to be have some time off in regards of his injury right now there. So they are sending him to a specialist. This is news out of the Red Wing camp this afternoon. So I will stay on that sharp and very, very quickly there. When I get notice of it, you'll hear about it on Butch on Sports on Wednesday. Or, you know, we'll keep you abreast of what the heck is going on that one there. But right now, the Red Wings look like a team that Steve Yzerman expect them to be playoff bound this year.
Yeah, expectations, I think, are a little higher than they have in past seasons. And the other Red Wings note I wanted to talk about, Butch, was regarding Tyler Bertuzzi. He is the only Red Wings player that has refused to be vaccinated. He says it's a personal choice, freedom of choice. It was a life decision. And this will cost him some money because he will not be able to participate in all 9 of Detroit's games in Canada and will lose out of a pretty good chunk of his $4.25 million salary. And I just wanted your thoughts on Tyler Bertuzzi saying it's a family decision. The Red Wings are, you know, allowing him to, you know, still be part of the team. And I know there's some more precautions for him as far as practices and such. And I just wanted your thoughts on Mr. Bertuzzi.
You know, myself personally on this particular item there, Bertuzzi is treading the line, okay, when it comes down to being a part of this team, or will we see him during the mid portion or early portion be traded? My spider senses are tingling here, and I don't think that he wants, you know, with what I got right now, which is, you know, he's the only one laying off of shots and whatever it may be. I don't think it's a good excuse. I really don't. I really don't personally there. You know, his hardship on not getting the shot can cause a lot of hardship on the team. Being that there, I'm not saying that someone won't catch something or something. Someone may not go down on some point of view on what variance is out there. But his responsibility toward being part of the team and knowing good and well, you know, that the shot is the main key of keeping everybody healthy. It's just something funny about this particular situation that he's bringing up, and his excuses to me is basically, you know, I ask myself, do you want to be a part of this team? Because, again, everyone has went through the wire and getting shots and doing what they have to do to stay healthy, and he's not, okay? And then when we'll look at the first part of the season, whoever gets hurt is always Tyler Bertuzzi. And I want to apologize for on Butch on Sports because I said Todd Bertuzzi.
Oh, yes.
So many times it was ridiculous when I should be saying Tyler. Yes, it's Tyler there. But, you know, I don't think it's a family thing there. It's got to be his responsibility alone there. So he can't be dragging the family into all of this BS and on why he don't get a shot. Yeah.
And I agree, Butch. And before we go to break, we'll talk about the Pistons coming up. But today, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was quoted as saying that the NBA should insist that all players and staff are vaccinated or remove them from the team. I totally agree with that. I wanted your thoughts. I think that's spot on.
I put it wholeheartedly there, okay? For order you to have fans in the stands and somewhat be an influence on the fans that you're serving. Everyone should, they should be vaccinated. That's just it. Somewhere down the line, it got to be someone. My father used to have this old saying again, somebody got to have some damn sense,
yep.
Okay? And when it comes down to that there, you can only be influenced by doing the good things, okay, or doing the things that really would bring people up and not drag them down to a no-not-one there. And right now, the shot is the way to go. I speak for myself, and I speak for others in my family, and I do have family members who have not received the shot for whatever reason. I'm still going to preach to them. They have to get a shot because, again, everyone else is affected by it, okay?
And we saw just this past week, Butch, up here, four schools closed because of rising COVID cases. I would state that no school in the area has a mandatory mask policy. We've actually had school board members quoted here locally saying that, speaking for the majority of the board, they don't believe in masks. And so to me, this isn't a surprise. And I'm in agreement with you. I have several people, family members and such that will not get it. I just think it's the right thing to do. And I think that personally, there needs to be stricter measures as far as businesses and organizations like the NBA and the NHL. Like you said, you know, it's your choice, but if you choose not to do it, you're not playing. End of story.
You're bringing people down,
yep.
in your group. That's all you're doing. You're holding people back from, we're seeing some type of freedom during the upcoming holidays. We got Halloween, we got Thanksgiving, we got Christmas, some of the most joyous holidays, and New Year's, most joyous holidays of the season. And who wants to be cooped up in a house or have to be on notice because of people not being vaccinated and spreading their wealth throughout the country? And then we got to look at the board every time you watch the news on how many people died.
Yes.
Or how many more people are crowding the hospitals and whatnot and hasn't received a shot. It just doesn't make any sense.
We're approaching 700,000 in this country probably by this month, if not next. I've been fully vaccinated and I'm getting my flu shot tomorrow, Butch. And after work, I'm taking about three shots because I don't like needles.
Well, I got my flu shot last month. I'm ready for my booster next week. And I'll be hopefully be set and ready for hopefully a gracious holiday season there. I don't want to spend it in the house. I don't want to spend it in being in seclusion and whatnot because of other people and their wishes not to be vaccinated and bringing their wealth on other people.
Let's take our final break on the game, Butch. When you and I come back, we still got to talk about the Detroit Pistons, who are opening their training camp tomorrow at Little Caesars Arena. We'll also talk about the Ryder Cup and the big USA victory. And of course, end with our favorite topic, or at least one of them, the world of wrestling. All coming up on the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show, The Game, ESPN 1400.
Ah, the joys of cooking. Just find a recipe, get the ingredients, preheat the oven. Okay, this is already too much. Pull up Applebee's to go instead. Choose from the whole menu, order and pay online, pick it up, and now you're home with dinner. Ah, the joys of not cooking. Applebee's to go. Now that's eating good in the neighborhood.
Pick up your next meal with Applebee's Carside to Go. Order and pay online, pick up, and head home. Reed Metals in Tafter, your honest, main source, one-stop metal recycling business serving northern Michigan, hopes you had a wonderful summer. Our summer is coming to an end, and soon we will have snow. Now's the time to do your fall cleanup and make some extra money by selling your scrap metals. Reed Metals will give you an honest price for your metal without surprise fees or deductions at the scale. Bring Reed Metals your unwanted scrap metals, and they'll print you a check. They'll pay you for items like scrap vehicles, heavy equipment, catalytic converters, radiators, batteries, aluminum rims, motors, copper, brass, lead, tin, cast, steel, and many more types of recyclable metals. Reed Metals is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit reedmetals.com or call 906-632-0018. Roll-off dumpster service available for both residential and commercial locations. Reed Metals is located just 10 miles south of the Sioux on Mackinac Trail.
At Old Mission Bank, we're ready to make your home ownership dreams a reality. We're excited to announce that we now offer USDA home loans with options for 100% financing. You heard that right, 100% financing for qualifying USDA mortgages. Come see our experienced lenders to discuss your personal options and let us find the right mortgage for your needs, because it's what we do best. Act now to pre-qualify by calling us or apply directly online at omblloans.com. We're Old Mission Bank, home of your experienced local mortgage professionals. FDIC insured equal housing lender.
Let's get back to the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show. Let's get back to the game on ESPN 1400.
7:43 on the game, ESPN 1400, Scott Nason with you. And if you want to hear the full two-hour version of tonight's show, you can find it right around 8:15, 8:20 on the website, thegamesportshow.podbean.com. We put all of our editions of the game, including the Game Sports Show in Sioux, Ontario, and all the special sports selective shows, Butch on Sports, Sioux High Blue Devil Broadcast, Coach's Corner, and more. Again, you can find that at thegamesportshow.podbean.com. As we continue to be joined by co-host Butch Davis from Butch on Sports for our roundtable. And Butch, let's move on to the Detroit Pistons, who had media day today and will open up their training camp tomorrow at Little Caesars Arena. The Pistons did announce last week they promoted one of their players, Luke Garza, who the Pistons selected with the 52nd pick overall in July. He has had a two-way contract converted to the standard NBA contract. The team announced on Friday as Garza will take the Pistons' 15th and final roster spot heading into training camp. And Butch, Garza has been somebody that you've been very high on, not just drafting, but just overall with this team. I like that move by the Pistons. I think Garza will be a big part of this year's team.
You know, I kind of wonder, again, the management staff, on why he's the 15th, and he's the 54th player picking in the draft, and the accomplishments that this young man has made is outstanding. He's gotten better every single year he has played basketball, you know, via high school or college, okay? Why would you not take a chance on a young man that basically has paid his dues, and then, by golly, he in the summer league, he really came on out the hole there,
yep.
Okay, when it came down to the latter part of the games in the summer league season. I still say that if this guy is given time on the court instead of the way the Pistons have been doing business in the past, he's going to show the Pistons a whole hell of a lot there. And they're going to need him because, again, you can't always depend on Isaiah Stewart. You cannot depend on, you know, on some of the new players they got there. And this is something right now that the Pistons need to spin their wheels and get him as much experience as he possibly can, because down the road a piece, you know, they said the same thing about Bill Laimbeer when he was drafted by Cleveland, okay? And Detroit went and picked him off there. And, you know, to this day, he has not gotten the claim to fame that I think he should get. He's one of the best shooting big men that I have watched play in a long time. And I see the same thing out of Garza there. Not only his offense, but his height and his defense as well there. You know, he's going to get better. And I think that's a player that I think everybody should be watching.
Pistons will open up exhibition play at home on Wednesday, October 6th against the San Antonio Spurs, and fans that are eager to get their first glimpse at the Pistons roster will also be able to take part in an open practice and scrimmage on October 9th at Little Caesars Arena. Admission will be free. General admission tickets can be downloaded, and doors will open at 2 p.m. The team will take the floor at 2:30, and practice will offer concessions and opportunity to purchase regular season tickets, allowing fans to take photos with Hooper and feature the Detroit Pistons entertainment team. My question to you, Butch, is, are you going to be there for that one? Sounds like fun.
I don't know. I have no idea right now, looking at the schedule the way it is. We will see if it's worth a lot of time. You know, this is just something to get ticket sales about there, but they don't know the parking prices.
You're right.
$20 and $25.
Yep.
And the parking in the garage, $50. You ain't going to see too many people coming around there, okay? They'll be parking at Joe Blow's Lounge, and hopefully they got a shuttle to bring them to the game and whatnot there. But there's some things that, again, you know, Joe Louis, not Joe Louis Arena, but Little Caesars Arena need to kind of look at there, that basically right now, with the teams being the way they are, and I'm not saying that they're primal teams that have been fine, but they're not primal teams right now. We're talking about the Red Wings as well as the Pistons. They need to kind of give the fans a break on the parking there.
Butch, one of my favorite events in all sports is the Ryder Cup. Not played last year because of COVID-19, so Ryder Cup 2020 was played this weekend in Wisconsin, Sheboygan, Wisconsin, to be exact. And boy, did Team USA take it to Team Europe. Team USA has struggled over the last bit against Europe, but they did not struggle this weekend as they dominated the four ball, the team play, whatever you want to call it, and then put the icing on the cake yesterday in singles play as Daniel Berger won the final hole in the final match for the final point in Team USA's 19-9 victory over Team Europe, breaking by a half a point the record margin since Europe became part of the Ryder Cup in 1979. And not only, of course, Butch, did I enjoy watching Team USA do very well, but I just love the fan interaction, you know, kind of the heckling a little bit, although they did it pretty sportsmanlike for the most part. But I love the atmosphere. It reminds me of when the Davis Cup was big. You don't hear much about the Davis Cup anymore, but
you don't hear about that anymore.
But you have a crowd that's usually very reserved, be pretty rambunctious. And certainly Team USA, they not only lived up to expectations this weekend, they exceeded them.
Well, you got the average fans coming out there to support those particular sports now. There, once upon a time, golf was the game for the Okie-Poloy.
Yep. You know?
That's no longer the case anymore. Is that, you know, golf is opening up a whole heck of a lot toward middle school kids, high school children there, the notoriety and the work that golf has done to get their product out there where people can actually see it and feel it there. They're doing one heck of a job of doing that there. You got to commend the PGA for doing a tremendous job in getting their product out there and to everybody, where not only they're watching the game, but you got a whole lot of young kids out there participating there. And we're going to see a slew of stars pretty soon come out the wet watch that you have never heard of. But again, they're going to demand the respect of the crowds and the people who come and see them, because these kids are getting pretty good at a game that once upon a time, they shunned if you found out they played it.
And Butch, in listening to Butch on Sports from last night, your show, there's no crying in golf. Apparently, there were some tears shed by Team Europe and at least one member.
Yeah, McIlroy.
Oh, come on, Rory.
Rory, cry like a baby. Cry like a baby. Why? You know, if you did your best, you know, I think the real kicking that they received, I'm talking about England there, I don't think they were expecting that.
Not at all. No way.
Believe next year, whenever it's coming about, when the United States go over there, they better have their guns loaded, okay, and polished, okay, and they clean, okay, because England is they went home with a very bitter taste in their mouth there.
The next Ryder Cup, Butch, is in Italy. That should be very entertaining.
Oh, yeah, because I don't know where Italy got the offer when it comes down to golf courses, but this got to be good there. You know, it's a different situation from being in Ireland or something like that there, which the golf courses they play in Wisconsin, it reminds me a whole heck of a lot of golfing in Ireland or in Scotland there, man.
Beautiful, you know, course. Right? Wasn't that a beautiful course?
Water, you know, you're 2 feet from Lake Michigan there. I was afraid when those golfers went down the hill and scooting and stuff there, I was hoping that they don't fall, because I just need one fence to break the fall.
Yeah, they need a life jacket down there the way some of those guys are going there. Bush, before we get to our thumbs up and thumbs down for the week of wrestling, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the Grand Slam editions of AEW. They had it at Arthur Ashe Stadium. And if you saw that first match on Wednesday between Bryan Danielson and Kenny Omega, and you heard that crowd, I have not heard a wrestling crowd like that in a long time. You also had CM Punk and the usual cast of characters. Really good performance. 4 hours of wrestling from the Grand Slam for AEW. I thought it was an exceptional card and just great atmosphere.
It was very good. And you know what? WWE last night with their performance, they had to step their stuff up.
Yes, they did.
Too, you know, so it's good to see that wrestling now with the competition out there is making a huge bid. I also watched the Broken Skull, where Steve Austin was interviewing what's his name, and one of the Shield members there,
Seth Rollins. John Moxley.
Not John Moxley or
Roman Reigns.
Not Reigns, the other guy. Yeah.
Seth Rollins.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
It was 2 hours there.
Oh wow.
It was very, very good there. If anybody gets a chance to go to Peacock and watch that there, it's an exciting and a very, very informative conversation with Seth Rollins and also Steve Austin there on his livelihood and how he got into wrestling there and some of the names that he named. And, you know, in order for him to be where he at, you know, and majority of these guys started off Ring of Honor wrestling there.
Yep.
A lot of them did, you know, started off with Ring of Honor there, and that's where Seth Rollins got his claim to fame. And it was a very good job, and I invite everybody to watch that particular one. It's on whatever platform you got there. It's on Peacock platform, but you go to the WWE and Broken Skull. That one is very, very good to watch.
Yeah, the WWE had their pay-per-view last night, Extreme Rules. Certainly a big card there. Roman Reigns still the title as he defeated the Demon, Finn Balor. I think the ring collapsed or some crazy thing happened. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. But next, actually...
That was too funny.
And on SmackDown, on SmackDown...
Strength and whatever, maybe he beats the crap out of Roman Reigns, and all of a sudden he climbs up the rope and stands on top of the turnbuckle, and it collapses.
On SmackDown Friday, Butch, and on Raw on Monday, the WWE draft will be taking place. And I think it's good for WWE to do this every once in a while where you mix up the, you know, because you can only have so many matches against the top guys. So that'll certainly shake things up. But WWE right now, Butch, got to be looking over their shoulder at AEW because they're charging hard.
Yeah, very much so. AEW is doing everything the right way.
Butch, let's end with our thumbs up and thumbs down before we look at what you're up to this week with Butch on Sports. I will start a thumbs up to the Lake Superior State University women's volleyball team. I have never been, and I admit, I almost feel sad to say this, I've never been to a Lake Superior State University volleyball match. And they came into Saturday's match losing 29 matches in a row. A lot of these girls on the team have never won. And it was a very exciting atmosphere in the Bud Cooper Gymnasium. The Laker women would win by the score of 3-2. They had several match points in set 4. They lost that set, but they came back and won. So great job by the volleyball team, ending a very, very long losing streak. And another thumbs up to my dad, Roy, or as we affectionately call him in the Nason household, Butch. He's going to be celebrating his 77th birthday coming up on Saturday. So happy birthday to you, Dad. Thumbs down to the Detroit Lions and endings. Just when you think you've seen it all as a Lions fan, you always see something new. A 66-yard field goal, NFL record by 2. Ironically, almost 50 years ago, another record field goal was hit against the Detroit Lions by Mr. Dempsey, and it was the same score, 19-17, same old Lions. You just have to laugh as a Detroit Lions fan, otherwise you'll cry. Butch Davis, your thumbs up and thumbs thumbs up and thumbs down.
Thumbs up for all the state college football teams in Division One who won in the state last past Saturday. Central, Eastern, Western Michigan, Michigan State, and also is Michigan. They all are winners. That's a good, good weekend for the major football teams in our vicinity there. And also, the thumbs down, it goes to Lions owner Sheila Fortham.
Boo!
Other members of the Ford family who was rightfully booed during the ceremony honoring Calvin Johnson's enshrinement in Canton during the Sunday's home game was well deserved. Too bad they weren't louder. I would love to see the meter when those boos were flying off there left and right. Because I laughed my rear end off there. But no one deserves those boos better than the Ford family right now.
Butch Davis, what's on tap for Butch on Sports this week?
I don't know.
I knew you were going to say that.
I don't know. Really, I haven't really decided yet there. So you guys just got to tune on in there. And we'll have something good to talk about, hopefully, on Wednesday. And we'll probably get some results, especially on us. On the Red Wings, definitely, because they'll be close to getting ready to hit the ice here. And also the Detroit Tigers, and see if any more fights will be, you know, happening there. I don't know here. See what the Lions are doing. And also we'll talk about some high school football.
Looking forward to it. And again, you can find Butch on Sports on our platform of podcast sites, including the game sportshow.podbean.com, or go to simplybutch2, that's TOO.podomatic.com. Butch, appreciate you joining us this week for the game. We kept all the hackers at bay and we'll keep them at bay next week. Have a great week and we'll talk to you next Monday for our next edition of the game.
Don't be hacking our show. We'll find you.
We will find you.
We'll find you here. Hey, and I had a great time this week. I'm waiting for next week.
As am I. Thanks to Butch Davis, along with David McKay Jr. and our special guest, Daniel Scarpino. If you want to hear the full 2-hour version of our show, you can find it here in about 20 minutes on the website, thegamesportshow.podbean.com. That's going to do it for this week's edition of The Game. For Butch Davis and Daniel Scarpino, David McKay Jr., Scott Nason saying so long, and we'll talk to you next Monday night for our next edition of The Game here on ESPN 1400.
Thanks for listening to The Game here on ESPN 1400, WKNW, Sault Ste. Marie's sports leader. Check us out next Monday at 6 for the Twin Sioux's only local, regional, and national sports show. You can hear the podcast of the show and other broadcasts at thegamesportsshow.com.